I'm talking about a study, a recent study on the entanglement dynamics of detectors, which is unruly DeWitt detector, kind of atoms. And it's not the detectors in colliders or in laboratories. And okay, the detectors are immersed in a relativistic quantum field. And most of the content of this talk can be found in this preprint, which is done in collaboration with Zhou Zhongxian and Beilof. Zhongxian is my colleague in Taiwan.
The quantum information gives a center at what they call the Cheng Gong University. So
south of Taiwan. Right.
So if you want to visit Taiwan, I'll write these things down for you.
Okay, so here is the outline. First, I will give you some our motivation and issues we are going to address. And then I will give you a little bit more details about the models, the tool we are using, and then the results with some discussions, and finally a summary. Okay, as is well known, quantum entanglement plays a crucial role in EPR paradox, violation of Bell's inequality and quantum teleportation and so on. And entanglement states are essentially non-local. I ate this quotation mark because Bill Unruh is not happy to use this term here. But entanglement state cannot be modeled by any local hidden variable theory. And this is why it's Einstein rather than others to point out this weirdness of entanglement states. And in the response to the Einstein EPR paradox paper, Schrodinger invented the entanglement, this terminology entanglement, and he pointed out that entanglement entirely departs from the classical line of thought. And unfortunately, the measure of entanglement for mixed state is known only for limited cases. Therefore, for this important property of quantum system, we actually lack in experience and intuition on entanglement. And so it's worthwhile to do more case study to gain more experience and intuition. And so it's no wonder why people, when people first discovered that the disentanglement process, disentanglement time is finite, they are surprised. Ting Yu and Everly in 2004, they found that for a simple system with two atoms in two independent environments, they calculate the concurrence of these two atoms, which is a measure for two-level atom by two-level atom, the entanglement of two-level atom by two-level atom, and then look at the evolution, time evolution of the concurrence. And then start with the initial state, looks like this, and they have a parameter A. And so they find that for A is smaller, it's less than one third, the concurrence exponentially decay in time. However, when A is greater than one third, this function gamma square ft cross zero and dive into the sub-zero region. And so after this point, the quantum state becomes separable. And that is the disentanglement time here is finite. And so this is quite different from our impression of on the decoherence. Usually decoherence goes like an exponential decay. However, entanglement is more delicate. It can disappear totally in finite time. And after that, people find other interesting behavior of the entanglement. For example, in the two harmonic oscillators, quantum Brownian models, which is equivalent to two harmonic oscillators located at a point in a quantum field, and people found that in some parameter range, you have a residual entanglement at late times, and in other parameter ranges, you have entanglement revival or you have sudden death. And also you have entanglement generation or creation. And here is an example recently done by my colleague in National Center for Theoretical Sciences. And they calculate the two qubits interacting with spin chain and using DMRG. And they found that, they demonstrate that in entanglement generation from initial separable state to entangled state. Okay, so above examples are simple in setup, and you may ask why such simple setups and not physics and calculation is not done until recent times. And the reason is that if you incorporate a field if the atoms or detectors or qubits coupled with a field, you have to worry about a lot of issues. And here are some issues. First, you have to choose a field state. And when you incorporate the field, then you have to deal with infinite degrees of freedom. And actually, this is the easiest part of the whole issues. And then, because you are interacting with your atoms or your qubits are interacting with the field, and the qubits will have back reaction or interplay to the field. So they talk to each other. And for example, for a point charge or for a detector, it will build up its still field in around him. And if it's accelerating, it may have radiation. And also, if you are considering a relativistic quantum field, then you have to worry about causality. And if your detector or atom has a back reaction to the field, then the net back reaction can propagate, and so you will have an influence another qubits. Then you've got a retardation of mutual influences. Also, since this retardation of mutual influences, it would be interesting to look at the entanglement, the relation between entanglement and the spatial separation of atoms. And if your coupling is getting strong, then you will enter the non-Markovian regime. And also for this relativistic And we have to worry about the coordinate dependence. And if your qubits are moving in uniform velocity, then you have time dilation. And if it's accelerated, then you have Unruh effect. And also, if for a uniformly accelerated detector or for a fixed detector outside of the black hole, and the event horizon may play some role in your calculation or in the result. Okay. So if you can be careful and to deal with all these issues, then we can talk about the entanglement dynamics of atoms, and you can see whether your system has entanglement generation or revival or sudden death or residual entanglement or other surprises. So to address this issue, we are going to consider this setup. That is, Bob is fixed outside of the black hole, and Alice is falling into the black hole. And this is in structure coordinate, which is a little bit misleading. And in classical coordinates, it becomes simple. Bob is fixed outside of the black hole, and Alice is falling into the black hole. Unfortunately, this is still too difficult to deal with because of the structured background. The quantum field in unstructured background is quite complicated, that you have to solve them in numerical calculation. And so we tend to consider a much simpler case. Two detectors in a Minkowski space. And Alice is an inertial detector, and Rob is uniformly accelerated. So the purple line is the event horizon for Rob, because beyond this purple line or the surface, the light started from, for example, from Alice will never reach the Rob. And a similar setup has been considered by Elsing and Milburn, and also by Fernandez, Schuller, and Robert. And in Elsing and Milburn, they claim that their results suggest that quantum entanglement is degraded in non-inertial frames. Unfortunately, their setup is criticized by Schutzhold and Unruh because they have considered the cavities as their qubits, and so you have two mirrors and moving in a space, and these two mirrors is quite a different boundary condition with the from the original derivation of Unruh effect. And so Robert considered another case. He looked into the field modes, the entanglement of the field modes, and see, and the Rob is an observer moving in this way, and Alice is another observer, an inertial observer, and they found that the state which is maximally entangled in an inertial frame becomes less entangled if observers are relatively accelerated, which is a consequence of the Unruh effect. What is the Unruh effect? The statement is that a detector uniformly accelerated in Minkowski's vacuum will experience a thermal bath at Unruh temperature proportional to its proper acceleration. I'll go to this point later. Okay, so To calculate this case, we are applying the unruh DeWitt detector model in 3+1 dimension. Here we have two detectors, but first we have a massively scalar field, which is living in 3+1 dimension. And we have two harmonic oscillators, which are internal degree freedom of two point-like part objects. And these harmonic oscillators coupled with the field linearly, and also the coupling occurs only at their world lines. And I will specify the world lines of A and B, but before that, let me compare this with a two harmonic oscillator Brownian motion model. There, they have two harmonic oscillators. This x1 and x2 coupled with harmonic oscillator BAT, and the coupling they considered looks like this. And you can compare this the harmonic oscillator BAT is my massively scalar field, and the two harmonic oscillators is there, but the interacting Hamiltonian, they choose the coupling constant, the identical coupling constant for these two detectors, which means this model is equivalent to this model with two harmonic oscillators sitting at the same point. Okay, so they are a little bit different. And so we don't expect that our result can recover layers. However, if we move these two detectors, and when they merge, we should recover layer results. Okay, so the motion of detectors is designed like this. This QA moves it's at rest in the Minkowski space. And this QB is uniformly accelerated. Its trajectory is described by this, and tau is its proper time, and A is its proper acceleration. And I set B must be greater than 2A to keep Alice far away from B, so that their back reaction or their mutual influence has a minimum number of higher order corrections. The back reaction of A to the field will propagate along the light cone and outwards, then reach Bob's detector. Then Bob will be influenced by the back reaction from A, and so this can produce some additional back reaction and propagate back to A. And you can imagine that if they are very close, then here they talk back and forth for many times. And if Bob is inertial, then they have infinitely many higher order mutual influences. So this is actually simpler than two inertial detectors case. Okay, so now our initial state is taken to be a factorized state of the detector and the field. The field is in Minkowski vacuum, and the detector is in a two-mode discrete state. So initially, it's entangled. And the good news is, if we take this initial condition, then the combined system is a pure state and it's Gaussian. And By virtue of the linearity of our model, this is linearly coupled. Then the quantum state for the combined system is always a Gaussian. So the reduced density matrix of the detector is also always a Gaussian during the evolution. So we can apply the criterion for separability for Gaussian states. And usually people use logarithm negativity, but for some reason I'm using the other one. And this criterion is given by Simon in 2000. We are looking at this quantity, I call it sigma, which is a determinant of some matrix. And this M is a symplectic matrix. And this VPT is a partial transposition of V. And this V is the element of this matrix V is two-point functions, symmetric two-point functions, or the variance is of QMP, QBPB, or QAPA. And note that this criterion is testing the property of the positive transposed Wigner functions. So it's testing the reduced density matrix and of the detector. So the reduced density matrix is obtained from integrating out the field states of the combined system. And this quantum state for the combined system is a pure state. So we know how to write down the density matrix. But the point is that this quantum state is living on a time slice. And so this field must be living on the same time slice as detectors. So implicitly, every reduced density matrix is associated with a time slicing scheme. And here we have two entries, T and tau, because for Alice, its proper time is Minkowski time T, but for Bob, its proper time is tau. And so we synchronize it. So tau has to be this form, so that they are living in the same Minkowski time slice. Okay.
It was the rough frame of A.
Yes. And we found that the behavior of sigma when it's negative, when it's negative, is quite similar to the logarithm negativity. And also, it's much easier to get the analytic form of sigma. So for our purpose to determine the disentanglement time, we are calculating this quantity sigma rather than the negativity in the following. Okay, a sketch of calculation. The calculation is straightforward. We just calculate the variance matrix, and to calculate the variance matrix, we calculate the evolution of operators in Heisenberg pictures, and it looks like this. And because of the linearity, the evolution of operators is a linear transformation in the phase space, and So you have to solve this C number functions. And so for the pink ones, they look like them harmonic oscillators. For the blue ones, they look like them driven harmonic oscillators. And then you sandwich the operators by initial conditions, then you get the two-point functions. By the way, here you see we got a mode sum. And so here, the contribution from here would be summed over the K space. And this will give you some divergences. And you have to put some cutoff. And this cutoff turns out to be important in our results. And this, those cutoffs are physical, because if you simply subtract them, then your uncertainty relation will not be hold. And so, but we don't feel guilty for that cutoff, because we treat this effective theory. And we don't want the pair creation of detectors or things like that. Okay. So here are results. First one, the first issue is a sudden death of entanglement. Okay. In weak coupling limit, and in the case of both detectors at rest but well separated, so their mutual influence can be negative. And more explicitly, the coupling strengths should be smaller. Should be small enough so that its product with the cutoff must be greater than the proper acceleration, but it must be much less than other parameters. And so we have two kinds of behavior of sigma. And we have two parameters. For Z8, it's always positive. And for Z4, you can it can be positive or negative, depending on the parameters in your initial state. And for Z4 is greater than is positive, you have an explicit sudden death here. The sigma cross zero is here, and you can determine the disentanglement time, which is finite. And so, for negative Z4, it behaves like an exponential decay. Yes.
That the state becomes just the tensor product?
Exactly. In the very beginning, the initial state. Then the whole, the combined system evolves.
You started off with entanglement or without?
started with entanglement.
With entanglement. And then at some point,
it disappears.
The state becomes a pure tensor product?
Yes, separable state.
So is this?
Not really your tensor.
Are you tracing out the
fields? Yes.
So you have an effective density matrix for the two parts?
Yes, yes.
So it's really not clear what one means by entanglement, but by this particular measure, it goes strictly to zero. Is that?
Yes. Yes. It's zero or positive if the quantum state is separable.
Well, what does separable mean?
In a sense,
the sum of products of density.
Yes, a complex sum of product reduced density metrics defined by Werner. Classical correlated state.
So if you start with a product state.
Yes.
And both detectors at rest, etc. What you find if you start with two detectors in a product state.
Oh yeah.
And they travel at rest, etc.
This is our next goal. Yeah. Yeah. Then we expect that for some special designed initial state, which is separable initially, it can generate some entanglement.
Because there were models where people tried to extract the entanglement from the vacuum. So I have two detectors, and I create like a, so So I distill the entanglement from the vacuum and I can see correlation. And I was wondering, if this has any hope to be real. Like I take one detector and I take another detector in the other room, are they going to be entangled in the vacuum? I mean, and see also and create observable correlations as an EPR pair can do, right? Because
I think so. If you have the properly designed initial states, I think you can achieve this.
And properly designed detector as well.
No, not really. Detector is universal. I just use the simplest multiple detector. I think in this study we always use this two mode switch state as our initial state. But you can have some distortion.
But are you looking for entanglement revival? That if you got one detector here, a detector there, and they're inertial, and you wait a while, but you'll later on find
that
they are entangled?
The homo de Witte detector can go through these transitions. Right? The homo de Witte detectors can go through these transitions at finite time. So the claim of this guy is that if you turn it on and turn it off very quickly, you can just make it transit to some state, and both the detectors get entangled with the vacuum and entangled with themselves. So you go home with the detector in your pocket, which is entangled with the detector which has never been in causal touch with. Now, I know this mathematically makes perfect sense. I want to ask if I have it.
What was that work that you just referred to?
Srednicki, I think. It's a distillation entanglement from the vacuum. And I know that it makes perfectly mathematical sense. I'm just asking if it makes physical sense. I mean, if I have in the textbook that I usually use in the lab, if they can go, if they can get entangled between each other in the vacuum, this is
okay, give me the reference, I'll read it.
Yeah. Thank
you.
Is it a recent work?
1999.
Okay, so compare with this, and you can see that this looks like this, and this looks like that. So, yes, in Gaussian state, in this system, we have a similar behavior of sudden death. To this simple system. Okay. Now we let the detector the acceleration of the detector being greater and see what happens. And we found that there's only one kind of behavior, which looks like an exponential decay of sigma, and it looks like that we have infinite decoherence, well, disentanglement time. However, if you look more closely, and you will find that this curve actually crosses zero at finite time, and we go back to our analytic expression and find that if you include the next leading order contribution from this expansion, then this term will shift the exponential this curve upwards, and then so it crosses zero at finite time. And so this entanglement time depends on the cutoff of your system. And so we go back to see the first case, then we see the same thing. And if you include the higher order corrections just off the Markovian limit a little bit, then you will see that both cases has sudden death of entanglement. And so we put two question marks here. on the, we wonder whether the disentanglement time is infinite in this simple system of the Markovian regime. But we still have no answer.
Cut off on the field mode? What exactly, how did, physically, what was your cut off?
It's something related to the time resolution of the theory, and when you are doing the mode sum, then you will have to have some point splitting in when calculating the 2-point functions or things like this. Q A squared. Then I have to make this in a limit Q A tau Q A tau symmetric. And so that cutoff can be related to this limit.
If you don't really take the limit, is that right?
Yes. If it's zero, then everything diverges. And
you compute this in order to figure out what the Gaussian stages of the detectors, is that the part?
Sorry?
And why do you need this quantity? Is it in order to deduce the Gaussian detectors?
Yes. And also for the criterion. The criterion needs these quantities as input.
Are you trying to understand the physical meaning of gamma for the cutoff?
Yeah.
Well, you actually, there's quite a bit of that in your earlier paper about the physical meaning.
Yes, as I mentioned, if you subtract it, in the beginning I just subtract this, and because in the radiation or the back reaction to the field, this cutoff cancels. And however, when you look into the detector rather than the field, it was there. And if you subtract it, then the uncertainty relation will not hold. So it must be physical. Okay. So the second issue is the acceleration and the coordinate dependence. Okay. So for a detector, uniformly accelerated in Minkowski vacuum.
I wasn't sure about the units more on the horizontal axis, but it looked as if the more rapidly accelerating particle took longer for the entanglement to decay, which is the opposite of what you would expect. So did I read it wrong? Is it true that when you increase the acceleration,
yes,
the entanglement decays more rapidly?
Well, we'll see. Yeah, let's.
But you showed us some answer already.
Really?
What?
Can you go back to the previous?
Which one?
Those, yeah.
This one?
Well.
No, further ahead.
Yeah.
Of
course. Oh, this one.
This one. Yeah.
Oh.
And the ones.
This case is both detectors are at rest, which means the A goes to zero. The acceleration of bar goes to zero, and they have to be put far apart so that the mutual influence can be neglected. And then I can not obtain this result.
What about the other one where A is not?
When A is not zero, then I get this. When A is not zero, but the coupling is still.
Are those
small
time units the same? Oh, it says gamma.
Yes. Gamma is the coupling strength. This is my coupling constant.
Are they the same units in both cases? Maybe it's not important. It looked to me like it took longer for the...
No, I don't think so, but I don't think you can see it from the graph, but I guess the question or the expectation would be that as what would, well, the question would be what would happen to those graphs as A is increased, and presumably the intercept moves further to the left, I would expect. Right, like that's for a particular A of 0.1, so if I made A 0.2, presumably the intersection point would go that way.
Yeah, if you take into account the other effect,
But haven't you taken that in? I don't understand. You have taken that into account.
Well, I will answer this later. Okay. So other effect states that a detector uniformly accelerated in Minkowski vacuum in this trajectory, for example, will experience a thermal bath at unruh temperature, which is proportional to its proper acceleration. Here, uniformly acceleration means its proper acceleration is constant. And Minkowski vacuum means it's a no particle state of the field for Minkowski observer. And indeed, if you look at the reduced density matrix for Bob, and you take some limits in weak coupling limits, and in this, if the initial state is a ground state, so the reduced density matrix is initially picked at rho 0, 0, and then you turn on the coupling, and you look at the rho 1, 1, which is the probability of the first excited state. And then you can see that the value of rho 1, 1 start to growing, and it's climbing, and then saturate and get in equilibrium. And so in the climbing stage, it looks like this. And if your system has a property that you can ignore or neglect these cutoffs, it's weak enough, then you have this, and this is the same as an atom put in a thermal bath with the temperature A over 2 pi. And C and H bar equals 1. Okay, so you may expect that for a higher acceleration, then Bob experiences a higher unruh temperature. So those thermal fluctuations will kill the quantum entanglement between these two even quicker than than small acceleration. However, you look at the leading order, and you can see that the ultra weak coupling limit, the behavior of sigma into the leading order is independent of the acceleration, so it must be in higher order, and so you increase A, you keep increasing A to 1,000 times, for example. Then you see that, for the greater acceleration, you got a longer disentanglement time. Why? Because of time dilation. Because we are using the Ellis and the Fields proper time, that is Minkowski time here. So we are using the Minkowski time slicing scheme like this. And Bob accelerates and becomes and speed up very quickly. So it's time. So in view of Alice, Bob is actually frozen in most of its evolution. So for a higher acceleration, you got a stronger time dilation, and so you have a longer disentanglement time. And where is the unruly effect? You transform to regular time and compare the entanglement between these two events on the same regular time slice. Then you can see a term proportion function of A, and this is the same as the case with two harmonic oscillator or two detectors, one in zero temperature, the other in a thermal bath, and two baths are independent. Then so this is indeed a unruly effect.
A gets big, tau DE gets small.
Yes.
Which is in accord with the result Yvette and I got.
Yes.
Yeah. So and it does really depend tau, on whose sprain you're talking about, I guess.
Well, this tau is the proper time of B.
Yeah, that's right. That's from his perspective, the more he accelerates, the faster sudden death occurs.
Yeah. However, you have to. Well, notice that this quantity is comparing the events here and here.
Yeah.
And the previous page, we are comparing events here and here. So here we have entanglement across the event horizon. But
it's sort of the more, in other words, the larger the acceleration, the longer Alice thinks it takes, but the shorter Rob thinks it takes.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a.
Yeah. Say, there are two effects here. There's a relatively simultaneity and the time.
Yes, and they complete, and they have a competition, and so it depends on your trajectory. Okay. And. However, our initial state is starting from t equals zero, in Minkowski time slicing, and we didn't specify the field state before the initial moment. So, if this quantity make any sense in this time slicing scheme, you have to specify the Minkowski vector before the initial time. And if you want try to get rid of this and introduce some crazy time slicing scheme, then the two-point functions or the variances are still the same. However, there's no guarantee on the Gaussianity of the field state in this complicated time slicing scheme. Yes. Okay. And actually, we have this. Yes.
But in the calculation you showed us, what did you assume for the initial state of the field?
Of the field?
Yeah.
Yes, the Minkowski vector.
Minkowski vector.
Yes, so it's a product of infinitely many harmonic oscillator in this one state. And so this is, plot actually tells us something. So when you are talking about the entanglement between Alice and Bob, and which two events you are talking about? Is this two or this two? And so you have to specify a time slicing scheme when you are saying that you have an entanglement between one event and the other event. Okay. And now if you increase the coupling strength, and you'll find that of the Markovian regime, beyond the weak coupling limit and the high temperature limit, the quantum entanglement is killed right after the coupling is switched on. There are two reasons. First, when your coupling is stronger, then the impact from turning on the coupling from the detector suddenly see a huge vacuum fluctuation of the field. So this impact will make it crazy. And on the other hand, the coupling of the detector with the field, when the coupling gets stronger, then the information, the initial information inside the detector, leak out to the field very efficiently. So both vectors make this quantum entanglement disappear very quickly. However, in this work, we didn't successfully consider the strong mutual influences. Here's, I have only 2% within the thickness of this curve. Okay, and now the special separation. As suggested by Baylock, I look into the entanglement, the relation between entanglement and the initial separation, this one. And I just look into the interval between 1 over b, with 1 over b in the interval 0 and 0.5. And this is quite a small window. And so you can see that at some moments, the closer the detectors are, the lower the sigma value, so the stronger entanglement. However, at some moment, some other moments, the proportionality becomes an opposite one. And at some moments, you see no simple relations. So I see no clear relation between initial separation and entanglement. And this is not strange because the window is very small. And I didn't push this QA to the other side because of some mathematical reason. I'm just lazy. Okay. But if we consider two detectors separate, both separate, and with special separation B, and weakly coupled with the field, in which the mutual influences are negligible, then, for example, this is D, and this is time. So in time axis, this quantity sigma is climbing uphill like this. So it's disentangled. It's in the disentangled process. And however, you can see some interference pattern develop as time increases. And so I subtract out the sigma, the value of sigma at this boundary, and see the relative value of this sigma. Then you can see some interesting pattern. This looks like a Nikon, which if your detectors are separated initially, for example, this is 7.5, and then they know the existence of each other after the coupling is turned up. They then sorry
Then after about 7.5, t equals 7.5, they know each other, the existence of each other. And interestingly, after they are in the light cone of each other, the interference pattern is developed, and the difference becomes very difference between different different separation becomes very clear. And before that, if you look more closely and cut the, if you amplify the contrast of this diagram, and you can see here they saturate, but here you can see that outside of the light cone, sometimes the closer distance between these two detectors, you've got a lower, the higher value of sigma, that is the lower entanglement, than the further. And sometimes it goes in an opposite way. It becomes the closer, the weaker entanglement. And so this result are for sure. And so that's the result. And here is the summary. Okay, so disentanglement, our result tells us that interaction with the environment, or here is a quantum field, does induce disentanglement. And the disentanglement time of A and B in all cases we study is finite. And we didn't find any residual entanglement between A and B at late times. And we don't have a long time entanglement between A and B generated. And the strong impact kills quantum entanglements soon after the coupling is turned on in non-Markovian regime. The question is, how generic are above features? And recall that we are considering a linearly coupling atom field system in 3+1 free space with no direct interaction between two specially well separated atoms, and Bob is running away from Alice. And this may be the reason why we don't see any infinite disentanglement time or residual entanglement. And if you change the boundary condition or change the dimension, you change the density function of the field or of the best. So then it should be, then the result should be different. Okay. And second, on the coordinate, each reduced density matrix is associated with a time sizing scheme. And we found that quantum fields offers a, well, this is not found by us, offer a natural choice of coordinate. We have to specify a state for the field. And when you put the matter in the space-time, you put the two detectors in the space-time, you have lost the diffeomorphism of the space-time, and sometimes you lost the symmetry of the field states. And in Minkowski time, the greater acceleration, the longer disentanglement time. This is because of time dilation. In Ringer time, the greater acceleration, the shorter disentanglement proper time. This is due to the Unruh effect. And However, in Rinder time, if you remember, for the crazy time slicing scheme, the necessary and sufficient condition for the separability may not be valid, because we cannot guarantee the Gaussianity of the quantum state. And for special separation, weak coupling limit with mutual influence negligible, and we found that outside the light cone, the radiation between the relation between the entanglement strength and the distance between two detectors changes in time. And inside the light cone, for sufficiently large separations, which means mutual influences enters very late, then this plot is still valid. And the disentanglement time varies in spatial separation, which means here you got a higher slope for the climbing for the sigma when it's climbing uphill, and here you got a smaller climbing rate, and so the smaller climbing rate gives you a longer disentanglement time, and for the and on the role of the event horizon, here it simply helps to cut the higher order mutual influences, and that's it. And we don't see any further role or interesting feature for the event horizon from the event horizon. Okay, now. The outstanding issues are we still not achieve to obtain the result of mutual influences, and because of the numerical calculation is difficult in these cases, and we are still looking at whether we can have an explicit time slicing scheme dependence, and also we are trying to manipulate our initial conditions to see whether we can generate some phenomena like entanglement creation or residual entanglement. Okay. Thanks for your attention.
Can you say something more specific about how it varies, like outside the light cone? It changes in time.
Yes, if you fix D and evolve in time, then you can see it's oscillating relative to the value of sigma at the infinite or at far distance. Yes.
In non-relativistic quantum mechanics, if you have two entangled systems at a distance, and they're allowed to couple weakly with two other ancillary systems, right, which follow them in case they have inertial motion, but they could be at rest, right, you would expect to see a loss of entanglement over time. Isn't that right? And I can't see why, since the interactions here in the field with field are local,
yes,
I can't see why you can get a similar result from non-relativistic quantum mechanics. And then the question would be, would the entanglement suffer sudden death or not? I don't know.
In your cases?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the sudden death uh, So I have no intuition on, on that.
I think the setup that you just mentioned, you said introducing ancilla and taking it away. The setup, I feel, is very true. Could you repeat what you just said?
Unless I've misunderstood something very basic here. Mm-hmm. Take two systems that are entangled and they're physically separated. Suppose, for the sake of simplicity, they're at rest. But suppose you turn on a weak coupling with two ancillary systems, one at each.
Separately.
Yeah.
One on each separate ancilla.
Yeah. And then, so these two systems start to interact with a local system.
Yes.
What the entanglement?
Yeah, I think it depends on.
But your two ancillary systems are not entangled, right?
No.
No, but the ancilla system has infinitely many different data. If it works like it acts like a bath, or like two independent baths, then I will expect that they have sudden baths. However, if it's degree of freedom, if there are degree of freedom or finite, I will expect there's no sudden baths.
The key is you would expect a loss of.
Yeah, the key, it seems to us, is how those ancillas are related. So in the case that Abel and Yu studied, they study two atoms, two level atoms, in two cavities separate, completely separate. Whereas here, what we're interested in is actually, of course, they don't talk to each other, but then the field actually has induced effect on each other. That's why most of these things sustain, because the field induced action from one to the other. Which seems to be a little bit different from the ancilla that you described, which is closer to Abel and Yu case.
It seems to me that this slicing independence is kind of a red herring, or it's not really there. I mean, it's certainly you want to measure entanglement between one event on one. I'll use our names. I'll use instead of Alice's name. Alia's world line, one event on her world line, and one event on Bai's world line.
Yeah.
But how you, so naturally you choose a hypersurface that goes through those.
Yes.
But how what the surface does in between shouldn't really make any difference to the answer. So you should be able to just choose it flat. I mean, you should be able to choose it for your convenience. It seems to me that if this is all done consistently, those are. That entanglement is described by some local, let's say Heisenberg picture operators on the two detectors. And you need to know the induced state on that subalgebra. It doesn't matter. I mean, how you compute it doesn't matter. But that's all it's really.
The
meaning of entanglement. So
for two-point functions or correlation functions, it doesn't matter. I agree.
Well, for anything, I would
think. Yeah.
It shouldn't matter for anything.
Yeah.
The reduced density matrix for the two detector systems, at those two moments in their history, I would have thought should be independent. It's just a well-defined thing. Mm. It depends on the initial state, initial condition and so on, but otherwise, it's well-defined. It shouldn't have any residual and further dependence on it. Some slice that you stretch out in between those.
Well, you could violate the signaling theorem, perhaps.
You did have a dependence on the slice.
I think Steven actually tried to convey the time difference.
The time difference is important.
Yeah, the tau and t, of course.
But all this wiggling of the surface seems to me, for self-consistency, it should be irrelevant.
You'd lose the Gaussian energy, but you wouldn't lose the effect.
You'd lose the Gaussian energy of the whole state.
Yes.
But the reduced one would still be Gaussian. Because you could have computed it, and that's flat hypersurface.
Yeah, I hope I can show this.
Or is it true that it's Gaussian only in a, is it true that it's Gaussian only in a t equals constant slice? Or any flat slice?
If you just draw a straight slant between those
still Gaussian
points, would it still be Gaussian?
It's still Gaussian.
Yes, that's true.
I assumed otherwise, because you computed the case.
Yeah.
So then. It should just be the reduced one should still be Gaussian because you could have computed it with the straight slab. And it shouldn't matter what slab you use, what Cauchy surges you use. Yeah. I mean, maybe unless issues of the cutoff are sneaking in or something like that, but. Right, because if you deform one into another, basically you're just making a unitary transformation of that section of the Cauchy surface. If you keep the endpoints fixed and you only deform the interior of the Cauchy surface, you're just making some unitary transformation of that third system, that ancilla, and that can influence the entanglement between.
I guess we're basically laying out all the possible variation variables and also at this specific point you provided one answer.
I'm just saying maybe it's not as bad. The answers are more unique. Then I have one other just a comment.
Please.
There's some confusion on what one is really seeing because proper time issue is getting mixed up. So, like, for example, the highly accelerated one, is it disentangling faster because of thermal radiation, or is it just fast? I mean, in terms of proper time, is it disentangling faster just because the clock is running slower?
Yes.
That would have nothing to do with that.
Yes.
So, but maybe one way of testing that would be to have another model where you have not an accelerator, you have an observer who starts in motion. I mean, body starts in motion. Observer B starts in motion. So you would have the time dilation, but you wouldn't have the acceleration. And one could ask how the disentangling time there.
This should be a question
related
for Rob, actually, because in his paper, there seems to be that claim that because of the unreal impact related that the entanglement time. So
yeah, it's not clear what's really doing it.
Right. So I think before that, one should actually check the proper time difference, which is what Rob. Which was the comment that Rob made earlier, that if you look at the proper time tau compared to t, you already see that effect.
But it's just an effect from time dilation, it has nothing to do with the thermal effect or anything. It's just a trivial kinematic effect. But maybe you could test that by comparing with uniformly moving, but not at rest, a third kind of observer who's not accelerating and not at rest. But moving.
Inertial.
An inertial but moving so that there's a time dilation, but there's no acceleration. No effect. No deceleration. And you could maybe make a more definite statement. Whether the decoherence one is seeing is due to the particular effect of the acceleration, or it's just a coupling to the field. Which has nothing to do with just the bath that's around.
But on this point, didn't you have something that addresses the difference in the effect of acceleration compared to proper time and the time difference? I thought you had that result somewhere.
Where?
Well, you have an A dependence.
Yes.
Certainly. Under unruly effect discussion, which is more like Rob and that paper, right? And then
they pointed out. Did Rob and Invest, did they consider this inertially moving observer?
No.
So they
did just
a simple
unruly, yeah. And the claim there seems to be putting more emphasis on the effect of the unruly. But I think what you pointed out is that they're both of these effects, and maybe that the proper time, the kinematic effect, dominates over, which is believed.
Takes up in the time dilation as well as changing the time.
Yeah.
So it makes it faster. Yeah.
I mean, naively, I would have still thought that if the, maybe it's overly naive, but I would have thought that if the acceleration is the thing that's causing the decoherence, it should happen faster in lab time.
Not decoherence. It's
different.
It's
entanglement.
Because coherence is true.
Yeah, so if it's the acceleration that's causing the disentanglement, why shouldn't it also act faster in lab time? I'm not sure. I mean, it's true that there's this time dilation. Maybe that's somehow relevant, but still you would think that if you kick the thing that's causing it to disentangle, you kick it harder, it ought to disentangle faster. That would be at least a very naive expectation, and your first results seem to be exactly opposite. So it's at least it seems to me at least raises the question: what's the physical origin of these?
I'm going to come back and give another talk. We should have to speak a lot of time.